arms akimbo. Look down at people moving below. Keep it open wide and feel which way the wind blows. Every day the view's a little clearer. Each night we get a little nearer. It feels like looking in a mirror. Left turns right and outside is interior. Try to keep it up, it up, it up. Baby, no such thing as making a sly move. We all know what you've been up to. We got what you want. 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 All the things you thought you kept within you, secrets and desires are in full view. It's a pain that anyone can see through. Where you wanna go and places you have been to. One step, the machinery will follow. Offering the vapid and the hollow. Cause they're made and easier to swallow. Things you need, even though you don't know.
You can look it up, it up.
And baby, there's nothing that we don't know. When you stand right in your window.
Telephone. you.
I've interviewed Lena Lovitch twice.
Say again?
I've interviewed Lena Lovitch.
Oh, yeah?
Twice.
Amazing.
And I'm a huge fan of Bjork, and I have all of Kate Bush's stuff. But I mean, I read all that stuff, and that is really cool. But I think you're more Toya Wilcox, Hazel O'Connor, talking heads. Do you know who Hazel O'Connor is?
No, I don't.
Oh, she is a new wave singer in the 80s and very futuristic, cosmic.
I'm writing that down right now.
Yeah, look her up, because when I saw the video for Wish List, I thought, this is kind of Hazel. This is
Hazel O'Connor?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like I think it's spelled?
Yeah, she had an album called Breaking Glass, and it was I think it was a film, too.
Huh.
In the 80s. So check that out.
I'm disappointed. I've never heard of her. I love hearing about, like, interesting female artists. And then at the same time, as I love hearing about it, I'm always a little bit crushed that they're not famous. You know what I mean?
Well, Hazel was pretty big in England, and Toya Wilcox is the other one.
Okay, I've heard that name. Someone maybe recently, Toya, yeah. T-O-Y-A-H, right?
Yeah.
Someone mentioned that one to me. I don't remember who.
I know Dave Vedini because I wrote a piece for the New Quarterly called Hockey Right in Canada based on Five Hole. So, and I used to work I was a DJ in the 80s in a punk bar called The Back Door.
Awesome.
So I have all these female artists. I have like tons of them, and all the, like, I have about 4,000 albums from around
brilliant.
That time period.
Yeah.
So I need to ask you, like, when I interviewed Lena, she said she learned how to sing walking back and forth, going to school, singing as loud as she could and as soft as she could. Now, I read that you learned to, like, your voice. Your vocal intonation started with calling cows. Is that right?
Oh God, that thing's still haunting me. Where did you read that? I hate that I said that all those years.
No idea. I'm guessing that you also took theater, so I'm thinking it has a lot to do with that because there's a lot of theater in your voice. So.
Yeah. Well, I think the call. I mean, even though I'm embarrassed about the calling cows thing, I remember as a kid on the farm. Yes, I remember the feeling. I remember the feeling of feeling my voice, like the cows are way, not even within sight.
No,
I remember
kidding.
The feeling of my voice carrying over a field and through a gully and somehow reaching the ears of the cows. it was empowering somehow. I don't know. And then they would come. Or it just felt like, you know, you can't do that sort of thing in the city. But,
not really.
But that feeling, so I guess I'm lucky that I've experienced that feeling. But it felt, I don't know, it felt like I had a little bit of a force somehow. And then doing theater,
yeah.
I was extremely, extremely shy as a child.
Yeah.
And didn't say a peep to anyone most of the time. And but somehow I got involved in the annual school play in grade school and felt extremely comfortable on stage. Mm-hmm. And people told me that I had a strong voice on stage. And they also, the teacher/director would always instruct me to go even louder so that the other kids would maybe go louder because no one could hear some of the other kids.
Oh, man. What shows did you do? I'm just curious.
Well, this is like, you know, grade school a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
So, in small towns, this happens because a parent or a teacher takes on the initiative, right? Because it's
pilot work
for no money. So in grade six, my friend Corey's mom decided to direct The Wizard of Oz, and I played the Scarecrow.
Oh, cool.
And then in grade seven, we did Oliver Twist, and I played Fagin.
You played Fagin, not Nancy. Wow.
Well, no boys ever wanted to do it, right?
Oh, Fagin, you'd be a great Fagin.
I quite enjoyed playing Fagin. Fagin had great songs, too.
Oh, I know.
Compared to Nancy, I have to say.
Okay, yeah, you're right. she's a little weak.
Best friend was Nancy. It's fine. I was always a little bit envious because I wanted to be more girly than I ever was. But then in grade eight, we did The Sound of Music, and I got to play Maria.
Oh, man. Okay.
And then in high school, I was relegated to tiny roles again, because
yeah.
it was high school. I was grade 9, and I got even more shy.
Yeah, I can relate.
and then just over time, I got bigger and bigger roles. And then I went to, and then I studied theater at U of T.
Oh.
And ended up in a, was still even more shy. Like, I just keep throwing, whatever. You end up in more and more and more uncomfortable situations, or you throw yourself into them or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And somehow I was asked to join this theater company upon graduation with 3 other people.
Which one?
Well, you might not have heard of us, but we were called Bald Ego Theater.
Bald Ego, okay.
Yeah, this was like a while ago, okay. And we produced, like, it was amazing, actually. And I still don't know how or why they decided to ask me to work with them, because, as I said, I felt like I had so little confidence and I was so shy. But somehow they thought I was good enough. And so it was me, my awesome still friend and theater collaborator, Lisa Ryder Cohen,
okay.
Adam Nashman, and Stan Rogel. And we all had a different sort of strengths. Like, I was always asked to write music for the show.
Yeah.
Lisa did choreography because she had a dance background. Adam's an amazing writer, director, and Stan's a poet. So we would make these multidisciplinary shows. And
oh, those are the best.
Exactly. And we did, like, I feel so blessed now that this was part of my early 20s. Like, we created, like, something like 15 original works in, like, 5 years or something. Or, like, it was a lot.
Where was the company? Like, where were you guys
Toronto.
Located? Yeah, but where?
Where in Toronto?
Yeah, all over the place, or...
Like, where do we do shows?
Yeah.
Initially, it was, like, Fringe and Summer Works.
Okay.
And then, and then we started getting, you know, we had a board of directors, and we started getting funding to produce our own stuff. So we did stuff at Theater Center, at Factory.
Okay, I was going to say Factory Theater, Pass Mariah, all those places. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm going to look this up because
this is pre-internet.
I'm a theater research pig. I will find stuff.
Okay, I've got tons of paper file records of all of this stuff and old posters and promo stuff and press. Yeah, it was pretty great. And then it was a lot of work for, you know, no money, like everything worthwhile.
I know. It's like, I do it because I love it. I know.
Oh, God.
I know.
And then funding got difficult. I don't, like, Mike Harris or somebody came into power and cut a whole bunch of people started going their separate ways, and Lisa got a TV series and, you know, stuff like that. So
what show did she get on?
She's been in a couple, but the most recent one, I guess, is, this is okay, just...
Being Erica?
No.
No.
Andromeda?
Oh, my God. No, you know what? Canadian science fiction, I also work part-time at a movie store, is the most whack stuff, like Lex and Andromeda. And
just like
U-X
milking Gene Roddenberry's name for all it's worth.
Jesus,
but so just, you know, that. But she was a spaceship captain.
Awesome.
Like, how awesome is that?
That's awesome. We have Andromeda at the store, I'll have you know. So I'm going to watch it this week. Okay, so then how did you... Okay, I under... Like, your music is great. Like, it's amazing. And,
I'm so glad you like it. I never know. Because I know it's pretty idiosyncratic, but I try to make it as accessible as possible while still trying to make it what I want to make it. But thank you very much for saying that.
For Disaster Fantasy, it's funny. I just interviewed Frank Turner. He's a kind of a British folk punk singer, and he did an album called Tape Deck Heart. And it was based on a bad breakup, and it was mostly his fault. And then he just put out another album called Positive Songs for Negative People, which is the next step after
it all
fucks up.
Good for him. At least he sounds self-aware. not everyone is in those situations.
So for you, what was, and I like Breathe In, like Drain Me Like a Sangria is a great line.
I put an extra syllable in sangria, too.
I noticed that. Because it's very rhythmic. The process between this, Caruso's brain, interesting. There's an interesting evolution here. So Disaster Fantasies, how long did it take you to write this? Was it like, oh, I'm so pissed off, and all the songs came together? Or was it a slow, painful...
Mm. Slow and painful is my method usually.
Yeah, yep.
It's not my choice. I'd rather be one of those people that claims to write a song a day. Don't believe any of those people, frankly. But I mean, a couple of times in my life I've written songs quickly, but generally, you know, generally it takes a very long time. And
right during wartime, very clever. Because I'm a Talking Heads fan, so I got Life During Wartime right away.
Thank you. It took me like 8 years to write that song.
Yeah.
Which, like, I'm not talking 8 years sitting at a desk.
Did Russo's brain, this kind of reminds me of the S-Files, like Dana Scully. Is there a theme to this record at all? Seems kind of more cosmic, and it's a very atmospheric, like, so obviously a musical evolution has taken place here.
Yes. Is there an aim? Is that the question?
A theme. Is there a theme to Caruso's brain?
That's an interesting question. You know, I would say the theme is, like, when I... why is this so hard? Like, it's in a very general sense, the theme is about forgiveness and inclusivity, like, and hope. Like, my last record was more angry.
Yeah.
This record, I want it to be more about potential.
Yeah.
At the same time as, like, fucking with things a lot sonically, I wanted to make it really easy to get in terms of, like, I wrote some really, really simple songs chord structure-wise and melody-wise.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like two-note melodies. Mm-hmm. You know, in more than one song.
Yeah.
And I attempted to write one chord songs and failed on with a few of them. Like, one of them ended up being a 5-chord song, but oh well. but still trying to maintain a really, really simple thing.
Yeah.
Just in a real deliberate attempt not to be alienating because I was fucking with things sonically so much.
Yeah, I get that.
And Caruso as an imaginary character, is sort of like my invisible friend who's also sort of all knowing, who's also sort of like the collective
neat.
Unconscious or intuition or energy or whatever that you tune into every once in a while, if you're lucky, and tells you that things you already know.
Yeah, Caruso seems like your inner voice. I like that you put her in a... Where is she? She's in a bus shelter or something like that.
You have my little mini...
And then you walk by and go, yeah, you already know this. So I thought... Okay, what do you guys know? But I find My Heart Ticks On is very interesting, and Galore is another intriguing song as well, and so is The Addicted. So, you know, the music, in this case, did the lyrics, like for the songs, the lyrics come first, the music come first, or what happened here? Did you just come to these guys and go, okay, here's what I've got? Like, because it's a very, like, the music's a character all by itself.
Yeah. My Heart Ticks On is like mostly a one-note melody.
Mm-hmm. Very, very heavy. I know it's a very heavy bass line.
And it's a waltz. It's in 3/4 time.
Yeah.
But it's not like a waltz in any way other than that. And it's
great lyrics.
Thank you. I thought
sort of
like
ellipsis. Yeah, great.
It just that one music and lyrics came at this and rhythm. Rhythm's a massive part of that. Came all at the same time, and I remember very clearly when that eureka moment came to me and I started just the first verse just started coming out of me. It was exciting. I was like, I've never heard anything like this in my life. Like,
yeah.
I felt like I was making something really original, even though it was so basic.
Yeah,
like,
no, it is.
Mostly one chord, mostly one note. I play on the one and I sing on the 2/3 of the three. And I just thought, oh, this I felt excited by it, and it just came. Caruso sent it, I'm pretty sure.
Caruso sent it to you. I get...
and she let them out. And all the world, and all the world, and all have done you wrong. Well, when what you thought was the way up, and all you felt, and all you want, on and on. Turns up as the way down. What the? Then right is wrong, then true is false.
From Hawaii, simply because it's kind of new wave pop, sort of quirky, kind of funny.
Yeah.
What inspired Hawaii? Did you go to Hawaii?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Duh. Okay.
I did, and it was sort of accidental. Not accidental. I mean, it took me a long time to plan it and try and get the cheapest deals and everything. But I was in Vancouver already, so it was much closer than being here.
Yeah.
I had 6 days with nothing to do in November in rainy Vancouver, and a friend said, "Oh, well, Selena wants to go to Hawaii. It's like $350 from Bellingham." It didn't end up being $350. It ended up being more than that.
A lot more, but worth it.
but whatever. I went and I rented a guitar, and I met these lovely people. This lovely guy at the ukulele shop who rented me the guitar, and
I
hung out with. You know, it's funny. I was just looking at some photos from my trip last night, and this I mentioned Dennis on ukulele.
Yeah.
On ukulele.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've got a picture of us all drinking kava out of coconuts at
wow.
Tommy Tuesday at the Kava Cafe. It was just a bunch of old hippies who get together and listen to the Beatles.
That's awesome.
And drink kava. And so I joined, it was like me and like 8 old guys. Anyway, I loved it. And I've got some, you know, Hawaii Facebook friends now because of it. And,
that's great.
But it felt like the song is sort of about, well, like the chorus says, I might change my mind and leave this all behind. It's just like Hawaii was filled with sort of escapists to me. Like people weren't political, you know?
Yeah.
Just like.
They just go there and.
They get high. They you can eat fruit off of trees. People seem to have a much nicer life.
Yeah, it's not a stress. Like you come to Ontario, and I don't know about you, but you can feel the stress waves in the air.
Exactly.
Even when you go out west, like my dad lives in Victoria, I thought, I'm never going back home again. I'm just going to stay out here.
Yeah.
And then you get to Ontario, it's like, my God. Oh. You can feel yourself constricting. It's so weird.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's all about, but anyway.
I tried to make the verses of Hawaii have that feeling,
yeah.
That like sort of agitated feeling a little bit, even though it's very poppy. And then I tried to make the choruses have a more expansive, open Hawaii feeling. And then trying to sort of sew the verses and the choruses together, I was actually really scared that it wasn't going to work, but Stringer helped me with that.
That time I was in Hawaii, smoking marijuana with Dennis on ukulele, talking about Obama. Drinking wine from coffee.
you guys are, and that's the other thing too, the people that you play with, like the faceless forces of bigness.
Yeah.
I remember Kurt Swinghammer from years ago and Michael Phillip, because I've interviewed the Real Statics and David Deeney and all these people. What was I going to ask? How'd you end up meeting Chris and Dave and Bob Wiseman, all these cool people? They've all been, you've worked with all of them.
Yeah.
How'd you meet them all?
Bob, when we were talking about the theater company I was in, Bob actually came to see one of our plays a million years ago. Wrote us because he was excited by it and he wanted to collaborate in some way. So I met with him a bunch of times and we talked about making a music video for him or something, it never happened. But I had all these. I remember having all these ideas and then met with him, and we ended up girlfriend boyfriend. I ended up being Bob Wiseman's girlfriend for 5 years.
Oh man, I did a concert with him years ago at the Registry Theater in Kitchener with Micro Bunny and Tamara Williamson, two of them. He's a very eccentric, talented person. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so I went out, and then I ended up in his band for 5 years. But I toured all over North America and Europe with Bob for a while, and it was great. And I loved it. And then we had a horrible breakup.
Oh, I get it. Disaster fantasies. Holy crap.
Well, that was more from my breakup with Martin Tielli. But,
oh, man. Okay. All right. Sorry I brought up the Real Statics.
So after Bob, I ended up with Martin.
I would think only very eccentric, intelligent men. I get that, actually.
Yeah, I might be over that now.
And musicians are, you get involved with a musician.
I might be over that torture.
That's wild. Okay, so how did you end up doing Five Hole with Dave? Because I have the soundtrack to this.
Oh, my God. You're one of those rare lucky people who has the soundtrack to that.
Gifted one with eyes like the sky in the eye of a cyclone. The air with obsession, and I breathe you in, fill my mouth with profession.
I feel a little low. Is someone gonna take me?
Worked very hard to make that record, actually. That was a pile of work. But the project itself was sort of, like, odd, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I met Dave through Martin,
yeah,
I guess.
That makes sense.
Ended up, like, with my first band ages ago, opened for the Rio Statics a few times around Ontario, I guess.
What band?
Selena Martin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
And actually, he did with Bob Wiseman, too, once. I remember in Winnipeg, we played with Rios. Anyway, and I don't know. I can't picture any, like, massive moment when Dave and I first started talking, but we've become quite great friends.
Well, he's a great writer, and, you know, the chance to write about him for the New Quarterly was my first literary journal. And we did a Q&A, and they used excerpts from the book, and he gave me the book and the album, so I thought, this is so cool. Yeah, he's great, but my byline was Coral Arl, which was really
Coral
weird.
Arl?
Yeah, like Coral Arl. And the publisher was mortified. I went, well, I'm published in the first literary journal, and I'm Coral Arl. That's really great. Sounds like something my cat would say. But anyway, there's that.
Weird.
Verda Hilly is someone else I've interviewed, too. This Craigslist thing, this sounds great.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with her?
We have a crazy, awesome life sometimes. I've known Veda since touring with Bob across Canada,
okay,
a long time ago. We did some shows together, and I met her in Vancouver, and her band, Ford, Pierre, and I have become very good friends. Barry,
yeah.
Marotnik, her drummer, is one of my best friends. I love those guys. And then Veda and I sort of clicked, and, you know, being on opposite sides of the country, you don't hang out that much, but every time I was there or she was here, we would get together. And at one point, like 10 years ago or something, she said, I remember her saying to me, I'm going to write a musical, Selena, and you're going to be in it. And then she did.
Yeah. And Bill Richardson got into the mix, too, and that guy's so damn funny.
I love Bill. He's such a lovely man.
What kind of reaction did you get from the audience for this Craigslist?
Really, really great. It was I missed that show. We did it a lot. There was quite a few productions of it,
yeah.
And I was lucky to be in it and to get a paycheck every week was very nice, even
yeah.
though it was only ever for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks at a time, but still amazing.
Yeah.
The reaction, like, those guys did such a great job of making such an interesting, fast-paced, energetic, hilarious, and sad at the same time show that it was a real pleasure to be in. The audience generally responded really positively.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. There's something else, too, about Cruz's brain. You've got... Well, Wishlist is cool. That's a really cool Christmas song. The Skydiggers did something like that as well with Angels. They wrote about Christmas songs but not the happy, jolly Christmas. More
yeah.
about people, because sometimes Christmas sucks. So
yeah.
this is a great song. I like Wishlist. And the video, that's what reminds me of Hazel O'Connor.
When the night descends too soon after dawn, snow falls and the green leaves are all long gone. Songbirds disappear, exiled like the sun. Earnest voices sing, Christmas time has come.
Really cool.
Thanks.
Dave Clark is playing a bike. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. I was, you know that film, The Triplets of Belleville?
Yes. Yeah.
So I sort of love the bike playing in that. Like, it's a cartoon character, this old Portuguese-looking woman who's got this, like, tall, massively thighed son who's been kidnapped. It's such a strange story, such a beautiful, strange film. And at one point, she's playing with those three singing women, and she's playing a bicycle wheel. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And I just really like the sound of it, and I wrote bike. I wrote a whole other song called Bicycle. I wrote a whole different bike song using inspiration from Queen, the Queen song from the Pink Floyd song.
I want to ride my bicycle. Yeah.
And I've got a bike. You can ride it if you like that Pink Floyd song. And then, and also somehow Melanie's Brand New Key, which starts with I Rode My Bicycle Past You. So I deliberately took influence from those three songs and made this started and finished, which, as I said, takes me a long time, a song which I chucked in the garbage in favor of writing this much simpler song just called Bike. That's really sort of punch in the face. I love my bike. I bike for as much of the year as I can in Toronto. It feels like liberty to me. It's more of a song about liberty than about, like, I've had my bike for 25 years. I can't, if someone stole it, I would be devastated. And so when I wrote this second bicycle song called Bike, I started not writing bridges in songs. Like, I don't find, I just felt like this, I don't know, bridges have had their day. I have some in some of my new songs, but some of them I don't have any bridges. So instead I decided to have Dave Clark play a bicycle.
I think that's really cool. I had to ask you that.
And Dave used to be in my band a long time ago, and we're great friends, even though we rarely get to see each other. For some reason, he popped into my head as the one who should be playing
the bike.
Yeah. And actually, I found out while we were recording, I went to his house. I remember it was pouring rain, so I didn't ride my bike. It was like pouring. But he's got like eight bikes there. So, I went to his place. We pulled a bike in from outside, turned it upside down, mic'd it in various different places, and he and I just sort of played.
That's very Fred Frith of you.
Thank you. And like did way too many takes and got way too many, you know, way too much material, and then poor Stringer had to sift through it all and I mean with me and like make a really short, concise little bike solo and trying to make it sound like a bike. People don't recognize that it's a bike unless you tell them.
From A to B, ooh, it gets me there. From A to B.
This is a bike sound I'm about to make. I love that when people take objects and there's a band out of Montreal called Brick that does that. They make instruments. They're very Fred Frith as well. They make an instrument make a sound, or an object make a sound that's musical that you wouldn't normally. You'd look at an object going, well, I didn't know it could make that noise. That's really cool.
I'm really big on that. I really want to pursue that more with whatever my next musical thing is after this one.
Yeah,
I want to try and I love it. Like I worked with Martin. I have some other stuff that aren't instruments on this record, you know, aren't regular instruments, just mm-hmm. recorded, and you turn it into a sound that's interesting, and then it's a fair bit of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of atmosphere going on as well, I gotta say. And there's three remixes at the end, which I find really interesting as well. When the City Fell, Lay Down Your Arms, and Lay Down Out, so I kind of like that.
Yeah, cool.
I like those bonus tracks, that's very cool.
Oh, good. Yeah. I really wanted to work with Dan Werb, aka Grapes Godley, on making something a bit more electronic-y, and I because I'm not really in that world, I'm more in the instrument music world. I emailed my friend Rich O'Coyne and asked him for some suggestions of people I might work with, and he's so nice. He sent me a bunch of suggestions, and Dan was the one whose stuff touched me the most, so
yeah,
I contacted him and we worked together for quite a long time on those songs, those mm-hmm. remixes. He used like the same bed tracks, the same drums, bass,
yeah,
guitar, but they were actually recorded. The vocals were recorded first for those ones.
Okay,
I actually changed some of the lyrics afterwards.
yeah, that's true. You did, because just at slightly, the end there's a reference to your hometown. I believe.
Oh, and Lay Down Out.
Yeah.
That one was done with Stringer.
Ah, okay.
But that was actually initially going to be on the record, but I couldn't figure out
where to put it.
Exactly.
Mm. Here's a question I always ask everybody. There's a couple, actually.
Okay.
What music are you listening to right now? And what music did you listen to as a kid? Because you have so many cool genres. I don't know. Anyway.
As a kid, I listened to Queen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Early Beatles, I didn't find out about later Beatles until I was in university, strangely. And,
oh, yeah, okay.
And then my mind was blown by that.
Yeah.
I was a massive Boomtown Rats fan in high school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I was had a crush on Bob Geldof. I mean, there's a lot, very wordy songs, sometimes very political.
Yeah.
And I just love the energy of that band.
Yeah.
Like, I own all their records. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. And The Jam. And The Clash. Like, all these are all, And then I got turned on to Liz Phair and PJ Harvey. Some really interesting female Talking Heads too, of course.
That makes sense.
And now lately, I don't listen to a lot of music.
Tune Yards, maybe.
Tune Yards doesn't do it for me.
Yeah,
I've heard. I don't. You know what? I haven't gone into Tune Yards. I've only heard a few songs.
But have you heard of Frazee Ford?
Yeah.
I just interviewed her. I just saw her actually.
Yeah.
She's really interesting. She's like her voice is like an instrument itself.
Absolutely. I know. I've met her, and I know former Be Good Tanya Sam Parton very well. Frazee's doing more of a old school soul thing these days, isn't she?
Exactly.
Yeah, she's amazing at it.
Yeah.
She's absolutely amazing at it. It's not really my thing for whatever reason, but I love what she does with it.
Yeah, it's just every once in a while you come across a singer, it's like, wow, that voice is really unusual. I told her, I said, well, I remember a song of the Siren, Liz Fraser, I think, from this Mortal Coil.
Mm-hmm.
She had a voice that, like, it was almost like another language when I heard that song. But anyway.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know a band called Buke and Gace?
No.
Okay, I don't know what they're doing anymore. This was a couple of years ago, but Buke, like,
Buke?
Like baritone uke.
Oh, uke, okay.
No, Buke.
Oh, Buke, okay.
Like, so B of baritone and uke as one word.
Okay.
And Gace means, it's same thing, it's like guitar, bass together.
Okay.
So it's a duo. They're both named Aaron, one female and one male.
Okay.
You know, Aaron and A-A-R-O-N and E-R-I-N.
Yeah, yeah.
They're from New York.
Oh, okay.
I saw them at Lee's Palace for a Wavelength thing a couple of years ago, and they blew my mind. I was like, her vocals are, I love the way she sings. I can't sing like that at all. She's got like a much higher voice than me. And she sounds a bit like, you know, Throwing Muses.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, sort of a little bit like that. Who's this? Kristen Hirsch? Is that who that is?
Oh,
is
I love Kristen Hirsch.
Yeah, so her voice reminded me of that, and the way they structure songs. So he sits there. This was some of the inspiration for my last trio band where my lovely friend Kev Lacroix plays like drums and bass at the same time and sings. So the guy Aaron was sitting down and with, you know, a kick drum with a tambourine inside it, I think, and also playing this instrument that had bass strings as well as guitar somehow. And they had these matching cool sort of custom amps. And she was playing, she had like, I don't know, like some sort of bells and tambourine stuff on her foot that she was talking. She's also sitting and playing this baritone uke and singing.
Wow.
And their instrument, they're just, the way they, it's sort of, I hadn't heard anything like it before. It was, I just really loved the songs, and I bought the record or the CD, and I listened to that a lot. Yeah, I actually really recommend looking them up. It's really cool, and it's really energetic, and it's really interesting. And lyrically, it's sometimes abstract, but in an interesting way.
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I have one last question.
Okay.
What's your favorite film? And I know you just rewatched The Meaning of Life, and I interviewed Graham Chapman, and that's another story.
Really?
I did. So Life of Brian is also worth a rewatch, believe me.
Okay,
it's
good.
Funniest movie ever made, but yes, fave film.
I have two. I have Topsy Turvy by Mike Leigh.
That's so funny.
Okay. And Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Tim Roth? The one with
Tim Roth and Gary Oldman, yeah.
Yes, that's great. Okay, yeah. Okay.
There's nothing recent. I don't see a lot of films.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It can be all time. So those are two really great films. Well, Selena, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. This has been great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking with you, Coral. You were fun.
Oh, this was fun. This was fun. I will see you at the boathouse for sure.
Yay. And I'll put you on the guest list.
Yeah, and the kittens are good friends of mine.
Oh, they're lovely.
Hit their films that they do. Oh, my God.
I didn't even know they did film.
Oh, Jesus. Look up the, Teabag something or other. Look up the Aurelia song. That's Nate Mills. They cut the living shit out of Aurelia. It is great. It is so funny because he's from there, obviously, right? Aurelia area.
Yeah.
And they are so freaking funny. And he does, film shorts with another guy. I can't remember his name, but if you look up the Aurelia song or Nate Mills, you'll find it on YouTube. I swear to God.
Great.
These guys, I go, you guys should put this stuff in Funny or Die because it's that funny.
Awesome.
Nate is very funny. So, yeah, look that stuff up. Anyway, yeah, I'll see you at the boathouse for sure.
Great. I'll put you in the door plus one.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
Well, old Bubby Joe got a pig and a crow, and his family is his town. Teeth all gritty like the Sunshine City, and his feet are always brown. Mama's in the kitchen with sister and they're bitching, the boat is gonna cook the sow. Billy's in the backyard trying to get it real hard, calling out for the cow. Alright now, welcome to Aurelia, it is so much fun. Welcome to Aurelia, hey Mo, get the gun, alright. Out of town, you just gotta frown, you know it is so sad. Teenage mummies, redneck dummies, economy is bad. Dump on the lake, a big mistake, that's why the water smell. We're the Sunshine City and the waterfront's pretty, and we even got a Taco Bell. Alright now, welcome to Aurelia, it is so much fun. Welcome to Aurelia, hey Ma, get the gun. Alright now, welcome to Aurelia, it is just so neat. Welcome to Aurelia, Tim Hortons every 40 feet. All right now. And skids, skateboarder kids complaining there's nothing to do. Too many cops, bankrupt shops, and this whole town's a drama. And on welfare day when you get your pay, go down to Casino Rama. Welcome to Aurelia, it is so much fun. Welcome to Aurelia, hey Ma, get the gun. Alright now, welcome to Aurelia, it is just so neat. Welcome to Aurelia, Tim Hortons every 40 feet.
And so, although I'm ready to go, yet recollect what is expected by neglect to thus effect the same direct. So I object.
Good.
And so, although I wish to your volume, please. And greatly pine to brightly shine and take the line of a hero fine with greedy born time, I must decline. And go and show both friend and foe how much you dare. I'm quite aware it's your affair, yet I declare I take your share, but I don't.
Beauville, that's very good, but I've gone to considerable pains to provide you with triplets.
Triplets, Sir Arthur, yes.
And on his salary.
But it is. Consequently, if you would be so kind as to trip.
Of course, Sir Arthur.
One, two, three, four.
And go and show both friend and foe how much you dare. I'm quite aware it's your affair, yet I declare I take your share, but I don't much care.
Now you see, Beauville, very much better.
Thank you, Sir Arthur.
The new man's doing awfully well. Quite splendid.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Breathe, Beauville, breathe.
He's a piano, Barrington. Piano,
yeah,
piano.
My best.
As many P's as you can muster, Rutland.
Without landing us all in the soup. One, two, three, four.
And go and show both friend and foe how much you dare. I'm quite aware it's your affair, yet I declare I take your share, but I don't.
And go on.
Care.
So
I object.
I take your share, but I don't.
So I object.
I take your share, but I don't.
So I object.
I take your share, but I don't.
So I object.
I take your share, but I don't.
So I object.
I take your share, but I don't.
So I object.
Gentle. Un poco più vivo. Now, before the double bar lines, one, two, three, four, and afterwards, one, two, three, four. Clear? Very well.
Right.
From here, please. One, two, three, four.
Care, I don't much care, I don't much dare to sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark dock, in a pestilential prison with a lifelong lock, awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock.
Concert.
From a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black lock. To sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark dock.
Good.
In a pestilential prison with a lifelong lock, awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock. From a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black lock. A dull, dark dock, a lifelong lock, a short, sharp shock, a big black lock. To sit in solemn silence in a pestilential prison and awaiting the sensation from a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black block.
Goodness.
Excellent. Louis, we have often left us café.
Your coffee is ready, Sir Arthur.
Thank you.
My word.
You did?
First rate.
Rusty, do go through.
Thanks, old chap.
Fancy a game?
We're spectators.
Do you want to play questions?
How do you play that?
You have to ask questions.
Statement one, love.
Cheating.
How?
I hadn't started yet.
Statement two, love.
Are you counting that?
What?
Are you counting that?
Foul, no repetition. Three, love, in game.
I'm not going to play if you're going to be like that.
Who serve?
Hesitation,
love one.
Who's go?
Why?
Why not?
What for?
No synonyms. One all.
What in God's name is going on?
Foul, no rhetoric. 2-1.
What does it all add up to?
Can't you guess?
Are you addressing me?
Is there anyone else?
Who?
How would I know?
Why do you ask?
Are you serious?
Was that rhetoric?
No!
Statement, 2-2, game point.
What's the matter with you today?
When?
What?
Are you deaf?
Am I dead?
Yes or no?
Is there a choice?
Is there a God?
Foul! No non sequiturs. 3-2-1, game all.
What's your name?
What's yours?
You first.
Statement, one love.
What's your name when you're at home?
What's yours?
When I'm at home?
Is it different at home?
What home?
Haven't you got one?
Why do you ask?
What are you driving at?
What's your name?
Repetition. 2-2. Match point.
Who do you think you are?
Rhetoric. Game and match. 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 Match.
Why are we here? What's life all about? Is God really real? Or is there some doubt? Well, tonight We're going to sort it all out. For tonight, it's the meaning of life. What's the point of all these hoax? Is it the chicken and the egg time? Are we just yokes? Or perhaps we're just one of God's little jokes? We're so sad of meaning of life. Is life just a game where we make up the rules while we're searching for something to say? Self-replicating DNA. In this life, what is our fate? Is there a heaven and hell? Do we reincarnate? Is mankind evolving, or is it too late? Well, tonight, here's the meaning of life. For millions, this life is a sad veil of tears. Sitting round with nothing to say. What the scientists say, we're just simply spiraling coils of self-replicating DNA. So just why? Why are we here? And just what do we fear? Well, it's a swear for a change. It will all be made clear. For this is the meaning of life. C'est la chance de la vie. This is the meaning of life.
Lay down your arms and I'll lay down mine. Let's see. We'll be right back.
Thank you.